Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
This 10th year of Daily Tech News Show is made possible by you, Brandon Brooks, Hector Bones, Tim Ashman, and all of you. Coming up on DTNS, GPT-4 is here, but will you notice? Plus, the space race for cell phone coverage is on, and why Marvel is picking a fight with Reddit and Google. This is the Daily Tech News for Tuesday, March 14th. Hey, it's Pi Day 2023 in Los Angeles. I'm Tom Merritt.
Happy Pi Day. From Studio Redwood, I'm Sarah Lane.
Deep in the 314, where it's 314 Day and Pi Day simultaneously, I'm Patrick Norton.
Ooh, good one.
And I'm the show's producer, Roger Chang.
Ooh, that's extra special to be in the area code. That is always, it's always Pi Day in St. Louis.
I can imagine everyone in St. Louis is just like eating pie and high-fiving. And
like normal, but a little extra.
Yeah, right, yeah. What's not to love?
Because that's usually the way things are in St. Louis. Did you know that Sam Altman went to St. Louis, went to high school in suburban St. Louis? He went to Burroughs out in Ladue.
Yeah. I was going to say out in the county.
Yeah, did not know that. Yeah. And how do you know that?
I was looking up his actual title earlier to make sure
Wikipedia.
I got it right. And I was like, hey, look at that. Hmm. Born in Chicago, though. All right, let's start with the quick hits, shall we?
Microsoft has signed another 10-year deal, this time with cloud gaming company Boosteroid, to commit to delivering Call of Duty. Microsoft says Boosteroid has about 4 million users globally. This follows similar deals related to Call of Duty with Nintendo and Nvidia, and Microsoft says more deals are coming. The company is trying to show regulators it will not prevent Call of Duty from appearing on other platforms if it's allowed to acquire Call of Duty's maker, Activision Blizzard.
Find out if Boosteroid is right for you. Platform reports that when Microsoft laid off approximately 10,000 workers back in January, remember that? It eliminated an ethics and society team focused on artificial intelligence. Now, Microsoft still has its Office of Responsible AI, and Microsoft says its investment in responsibility work for AI is increasing. Like, yes, we got rid of that team, but we have increased our efforts overall. Many of the former members of the Ethics and Society team are directly on product teams now or work inside that Office of Responsible AI. However, there is no central hub devoted to thinking about AI ethics design at Microsoft any longer. That's what Platformer found out.
According to documents seen by Reuters, the Indian IT ministry is considering new rules that would require smartphone makers to let users remove pre-installed apps. The rules might also require phone makers to submit major OS updates for government screening before being shipped. Meeting records show the IT ministry met with representatives of Xiaomi, Samsung, Apple, and Vivo to discuss these new proposed rules.
A California state appeals court reversed a lower court ruling that Proposition 22 was unconstitutional. If you don't remember, Prop 22 defined gig workers for ride-hailing services specifically, much to my annoyance as a small business owner in California, as a new class of independent contractor with more rights than most independent contractors, but fewer rights than actual employees. So Prop 22, if this decision holds, would be back to being the law in California, though the court did strike down one clause in Prop 22 that made it more difficult to organize a union. Now, it may not be the end of the road, as the group that sued over Prop 22's constitutionality can still appeal it to the California Supreme Court. They haven't decided if they're going to do that yet. And whatever is decided is going to set a precedent for similar laws being pursued in other states.
Meta CEO Mark Zuckerberg announced the company will cut 10,000 jobs over the next 2 months. You might recall that Meta let go around 11,000 employees in November, leaving an estimated 87,000 employees. Still a lot of employees, but apparently 10,000 will be cut. The company will also close hiring for 5,000 open roles and cancel low-priority projects. Related to those projects, Meta's head of commerce, Stefan Kasriel, announced the company will wind down support for NFTs and digital collectibles on Instagram and Facebook in order to pursue other projects.
And the NFTs are going to pursue solo projects. They're breaking up with him.
The company is, but yeah. The NFTs, you know, they're free to do that as well.
Yeah, they're going to go off and make their own albums.
Best of luck.
Yeah, good luck to them. All right, that is a look at quick hits. A couple of space bits of news today. CNBC reporting that by the end of this year, SpaceX and T-Mobile will start testing using Starlink to provide satellite-to-cell service. So in other words, where you don't have cell service, Starlink would be available to fill in. The idea is to end mobile dead zones. Now, they're not the only ones doing this. Amazon's Project Kuiper has a similar partnership with Verizon. And Project Kuiper just showed off its customer satellite internet terminals. The 100 megabit per second one looks like a little squirrel picnic table. They all look like tables. In fact, the larger one looks like a table for a raccoon. All of the terminals use Amazon's own Prometheus chip. And of course, Apple and Qualcomm have partnerships with Globalstar and Iridium, respectively. That's for emergency data service, though. Then there are other satellite companies out there like OneWeb, Link, and AST Space Mobile. Just wants to do full-on space telephone service. Patrick, are you excited for no more dead zones?
This is absolutely, utterly, and totally what I would call a mixed blessing. The idea of never, ever being out of range of someone calling me is abjectly, utterly, and totally horrifying at some levels. On the other hand, you know, having been in a situation where I had to drive 8 miles to get to a road, to drive 10 miles to get to a town, where I had to get change and then punch change into the machine, there's part of me, it's like, hey, satellite everywhere. It's cool. I'm a lot more excited about the idea of Starlink having competition, just so we can see prices start to come down. I'm also not really surprised that everyone's partnering with mobile companies, because mobile companies make a lot of money, and satellites are really expensive to put up in space. So, you know, a lot of this makes sense to me. Really, really curious to see performance, you know, what kind of line of sight it needs. Because one of the big challenges with Starlink, because satellites in space, is that to get optimal performance, you know, you need to be able to see a large chunk of sky. I'm assuming it's going to be the exact same thing, you know, for Amazon's.
I'm already picturing the PC Mag article that explains why T-Mobile says this isn't a dead zone, but because of the tree coverage, you would have to climb the tree to get your signal, right? Like, I could see stuff like that coming.
Or even in a city, if you're it's too dense.
If you're on the top floor, you can get the Starlink, no problem.
Yeah, and to the mobile, you know, it's kind of interesting. One of the things about the mobile product they put together was that it does not try to scan all of the sky. I am exaggerating. It scans less of the sky than the fixed version does. But it's really interesting to look at this, because people are like, you know, I spent a lot of time. We were full-time RVing. Having this kind of internet access would have been a game changer in a way that it's really hard to explain if you haven't tried to balance having, you know, mobile coverage as your primary way of making money. But the flip side is, when you're in an RV park, or for example, when you are camping in places that are not the desert, you often want to be under trees. Yep. Trees will not work with the satellites because of the space and the leaves and the needles interrupting the view of the satellites, he said. said, sounding like a really demented ChatGPT-1 children's story.
But yeah, this is going to become more common, and we're going to start complaining that we can't get service under trees when we couldn't get service in the entire forest before. Like that's going to happen. I think it's also interesting to point out like that these companies that are putting up satellites probably don't see consumers as their main revenue source. Starlink, yeah, they've got more than a million consumers, and that helps them publicly test it and get the word out. Right. But selling backhaul to T-Mobile, that's where they're going to make their money.
I'm actually kind of really curious how that's going to roll out, because there's a lot, you know, there's a finite number of people they can put in a cell. Right. And once that's, you know, I'm curious. Right. I'm very, very curious to see how that rolls out and what the financials look like in a few years.
Yeah. The Prometheus chip that Amazon made, apparently Amazon says, can handle thousands of customers at once and has two point to point microwave backhauls in it. Obviously, the squirrel size one is not for that. But the big commercial size ones, the larger than raccoon,
the raccoon
size
one.
Ones. Yeah.
Sorry, I've been visioning the Outer Sunset raccoons that were the size of my dog.
Yeah.
Oh, you should have seen the raccoon I saw the other night. Ooh,
no,
boy.
Thank you.
They are commercial satellite internet sized raccoons out there.
You know, I've got some friends who live not super far from me, but they live in an area that's even more of a cell dead zone than where I live. My sure. Wi-Fi is fine. Mm-hmm. When the Wi-Fi goes down, I have to drive 10 miles to the east just to be able to call my mother and be like, I'm coming to your house.
Right.
And they got Starlink probably about 6 months ago. And I was like, how is it? And they were like, well, we have internet, so it's amazing, and yeah. We'll pay anything,
right?
Because that was the only option, at least, you know, according to them at the time. So,
right.
You know, anything like this that starts to become more norm, mm-hmm. helps people to be able to live wherever you want to live and right. get the, you know,
and
on
not
the
make
internet.
A compromise. Yeah.
Exactly. And, you know, maybe prices come down because, you know, as you mentioned, Tom, there are competitors as well. I think this is sure. a win for everybody.
Yeah. If you were on T-Mobile and this was in existence and you suddenly got cell service without having to use your Wi-Fi when the Wi-Fi was down, it's huge. That I could totally see that.
Right. Or if you're one of the millions of places that have DSL only. It was kind of fascinating to watch certain parts of the country that were just dense enough to have a lot of people fill up their cells, you know, their allotted space and the hexagons for Starlink. And you were like, there's not that. Oh, I guess there were a lot of people there that did want internet that couldn't mm-hmm. get DSL.
Or wanted something at least better than DSL in some cases.
Oh, gosh.
Well, I might ask you, what would the Marvel superheroes do in this situation? Mm.
Fly there.
Yeah. That was a terrible segue. Before the release of Ant-Man and the Wasp's Quantumania, some of the movie's dialogue was posted in a Google Doc and linked to from a post on Reddit. This falls under copyright violation, so under the rules of the U.S. Digital Millennium Copyright Act, a.k.a. the DMCA, Disney issued a takedown notice, and the doc was deleted by Google, and the link was deleted on Reddit the same day that it was posted. That's done, right? Well, no. Disney said, we'd like to go further with this. Marvel has requested the District Court for the Northern District of California to issue a subpoena to Reddit and Google for the identities of users involved in posting or editing the content, as well as for the identities of the users of the account MSS Mods, which is shared by moderators of the Marvel subreddit.
Now, I'm going to start on the side of the studio here and then end up where I actually am. On the side of the studio, you want to find the person who got a hold of this. The suspicion is that they got a hold of a foreign language subtitle script and were able to get the stuff out of that. You want to find out who that is. You want to track down the source of the link or the leak, and you want to stop it. I get that. And to be able to get that person, you want to do everything in your power, which means you want to know who that person was responding to, who else helped that person, how was the communication done? Because if you find out who they were communicating with, you have a better chance of figuring out who the person was. So they're asking for a wide net. That's why they're asking for a wide net. This isn't really punitive for the mods on Reddit. It's that we want to see what the mods were saying, because that'll help us figure out who the person responsible was. this. That is not what the DMCA is for. The DMCA is for stopping you from subverting copyright. And the DMCA was executed as soon as Google took this down. I don't think they even really should have been able to get the link removed from Reddit because the link was dead at that point. But right. If I'm Reddit, yeah, I'll remove the dead link if that makes you happy. Why not? Going after the identity of the Google Doc holder, I don't love, but makes sense. It's beyond the scope of the DMCA, but Disney has a right to go after that person. However, beyond that, I'm not sure if a subpoena should be issued. I think you're starting to say, like, well, where does it end? What else would you like to just have all the server logs of everyone who was on Google that day? Because you have a chance of maybe catching the person who did it. It starts to go beyond a reasonable request at that point, at least where I stand. What do you think, Patrick?
Whenever one of these things happen, on one hand, I'm incredibly sympathetic. You have staggering amounts of money invested in the creation of this property. You need to earn your money back. There's shareholders. There's mayhem. But invariably, every time I read one of these, I hear Joe Pesci playing Anthony Spilotro in Casino going, you know, I want him dead. Or maybe it was Robert De Niro, but I want him dead. I want their families dead. I want their goats and their chickens dead. I want you to burn the house down and salt the
egg. I think it was Joe Pesci.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah.
It sounds like him.
Yeah, but it, you know what I mean? Like, it's always this kind of, like, salted earth. We want everyone. We want to sue the cable manufacturers who provided the cable in the centers where the packets were
right,
shifting.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
There's
never any end to it. Part of me is sympathetic, and part of me is like, you know.
There's so much of this that's like, I 100% understand where Disney's like, oh man, you know, like this is such a buzzkill, right? Like, let's go after the people who have ruined the movie for everybody. The people who want to watch the movie don't care about this.
I didn't see this before I saw Ant-Man Quantumania.
They're going to see the movie.
It did not affect my enjoyment at all.
Even if you could watch it,
yeah.
You know, let's get real here.
I'm less sympathetic to the copyright part of this case, where I'm 100% and agree with you, Sarah, is like, it really isn't that damaging. I'm more sympathetic with, but we want to find out who was responsible for leaking it. Because we want to make sure this doesn't happen again.
Maybe in the future, you know, something like that would, you know, be more harmful to the studio.
Yeah. Reddit's fighting this whole separate court battle with studios over who want identities of users who posted comments in a thread about piracy, because that might lead them to people who are pirating, which I think is absolutely ridiculous. So, studios have the wherewithal to overdo it. So they're going to overdo it, because what do they have to lose? They're going to spend the same money on the case anyway. And if nothing else, they sow some fear, uncertainty, and doubt out there that might dissuade some people from trying stuff in the future.
It's also a spectacular example of what you can do to get people to click on something, to download something, to hopefully infest their computer with malware. I mean, none of you should have clicked on this. It's a trap.
Yeah, right.
Not that
exactly.
Reddit's unsafe.
Even though it wasn't
Google
in this case. Another time,
but
it will be. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Folks, if you have a thought about this, are you on the side of Ant-Man in all of this? You're like, I'm not for Disney or for the piracy. I'm for Ant-Man. Send us an email, feedback@dailytechnewsshow.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone. This podcast is supported by Tools and Weapons, the podcast hosted by Microsoft Vice Chair and President Brad Smith. Right now on a special edition of Tools and Weapons, Brad Smith is sharing a vision for what Microsoft calls the new AI economy. It's an idea rooted in technological revolutions of the past, like the printing press, which created a vibrant marketplace of related innovations, ultimately leading to an explosion of books and readers. But he doesn't just give a history lesson. In the episode, Brad lays out the tangible ways that Microsoft is providing infrastructure and other support to those leading the charge of the new AI economy. And he explains the importance of using that infrastructure to ensure equitable access to AI to people all over the world. To stay current on insights from voices at the center of the conversation on AI, follow or subscribe to Tools and Weapons with Brad Smith wherever you like to listen.
Well, y'all, Google seems to have a little bit of an issue with timing its AI news, because it has a lot of its own AI news. Tuesday, Google announced new features coming to Google Workspaces. Trusted testers would get writing tools in Docs and Gmail this month that can do things like compose emails for you from bullet points, summarize blocks of text. Many of us say, pretty cool. Developers are getting something as well. Google launched API access for its large language model, also known as PaLM, alongside an app called MakerSuite that can help fine-tune your use of this model. The company is also launching a platform called Generative AI App Builder to speed up shipping new apps like chatbots and digital assistants. Now, this all comes a couple of days before Microsoft's Future of Work with AI, which is an event that is taking place on March 16th. Sounds like a scoop, doesn't it, Tom? Oh.
Yeah.
Au contraire.
OpenAI released GPT-4 today. Google can't catch a break. They had the whole thing with Bing and AI last month. Today, they're like, this time we've got it. Microsoft's things later this week. We're going to put out all our AI news, and OpenAI is like, hey, we've got the next model of GPT, GPT-4. And we've even got API access, just like you do, Google. Developers can get on a wait list for GPT-4 API access. It's going to already power ChatGPT if you subscribe. So if you're paying $20 a month for the ChatGPT Plus service, your ChatGPT will be powered by GPT-4. Microsoft says that Bing has been powered by GPT-4 for the past 5 weeks. And if you're like, okay, GPT-4, it's one better. What's better about it? It can accept text and images as inputs. So for example, it could write a caption if you give it an image, or you could give it an image and say, please describe what's in the image. It doesn't generate them, but it can describe them. It can react to them. OpenAI says it spent 6 months aligning the program to give good results on factuality, steerability, staying within guardrails. Though again, Microsoft says it's been using it in Bing for the past 5 weeks, so it's not as good as staying in the guardrails there as maybe it is in this release. I don't know. In a blog post, OpenAI wrote, in a casual conversation, the distinction between 3.5 and 4 can be subtle. The difference comes out when the complexity of the task reaches a sufficient threshold. GPT-4 is more reliable, creative, and able to handle much more nuanced instructions than GPT-3.5. But also, OpenAI CEO Sam Altman wrote, it is still flawed, still limited, and it still seems more impressive on first use than it does after you spend more time with it.
Way to sell a product.
I know, right?
Sam.
I mean, I've heard from lots of people that wait till GPT-4 comes out. This is going to be the game changer. But Patrick, it sounds like you might not notice.
Okay, first of all, I have to make the obligatory Skynet joke. Wouldn't it be sad and wondrous if Skynet came out of Bing, of all places? Yeah. So... part of what's crazy about what GPT-4 can do. Now, this is coming straight off of the OpenAI website, openai.com, when you go to the GPT-4 stuff. So one, much larger amounts of text, like 25,000 words of text, which is a lot. If you've ever typed 25,000 words, Tom, I know you have. That is a rather large chunk of information to process. But the thing that kind of was kind of the part that freaks me out, right? As you keep scrolling down, it's like ChatGPT outperforms ChatGPT by scoring in higher approximate percentiles amongst test takers. It's like, oh, that's interesting. And so they threw it against the uniform bar exam. So ChatGPT was in the 10th percentile on the bar exam. This is not good. This is not a lawyer you want, although we could argue that, you know,
Don't use it as a lawyer.
ChatGPT-4 scored 90th percentile. In the biology Olympiad, ChatGPT was 31st. ChatGPT-4 with vision was in the 99th percentile.
Wow.
So the idea is that, you know, and I'm going to quote this because I just like looking at the pictures and the gigantic text on the page. Following the research path from GPT, GPT-2, and GPT-3, our deep learning approach leverages more data and more computation to create increasingly sophisticated and capable language models. So if you've been experimenting with ChatGPT, you know, it is fascinating because I've mentioned this before. I've been dealing with some human powered services versus ChatGPT. And in terms of things like grammar and actually having a lead paragraph, and if you don't know what that is, just type in lead paragraph on Google and you'll learn more than you ever wanted to know about how news articles and everything else is put together to grab your attention. But what's fascinating is that, you know, ChatGPT can also write incredibly authoritatively and accurately and be dead wrong. So, you know, but I look at this and I'm like, this, you know, it takes a significant amount of, you know, mental human processing to do the bar exam, or I'm sure to go through a biology Olympiad, but I'm not super familiar with that. And to see this kind of performance jump. Again, this is not the real world. This is their test.
This is a measure of accuracy, though, to your point, right? Yeah. Like, this means GPT-4 doesn't get things wrong as often. Because what I'm hearing from you and Altman's post and what they're saying is, this won't visually appear that different because it's going to sound just as authoritative. But behind the scenes, it actually might be right more often. Your mileage still may vary. You shouldn't rely on it. I think that's why Altman's coming out saying, don't think this thing is perfect. Don't rely on it. You still need to fact check it, but it should be better.
I mean, something somebody said to me as an aside, they worked on the Watson team. This is several years ago. And they were basically like, look, white collar jobs, they're going to get destroyed by AI just the way automation destroyed jobs, you know, in the working sector. If you want to debate me about whether or not this enhances jobs or create jobs or what it means, that's fine. You know, tweet at Patrick Norton. We'll get into a spirited debate about this. But what is happening is when you think about how many times have you seen processing errors with a service? How many times have you read about a court case that went off because somebody missed a technicality? And, you know, the thing about computers is when they work, they do a pretty good job of never failing, right? You know what I mean? We can argue about that too, and feel free to roast me on Twitter or anywhere else, because we've all had cases where the computer was
absolutely screwing everything off. There's an exception to every rule, but computers work more reliably than humans when they're good at something.
That's a big caveat, but it's an interesting idea. You know, one of the things that people are saying is, look, there's certain jobs that aren't going away. This will make you more efficient. It will make you faster. It will make you more accurate. And, you know, I got to be honest, I'm pretty sure I would get my ass kicked by the uniform bar exam right now, even if I studied for it for a few weeks. And the fact that they can throw this at it and it could be, you know, fairly successful, I'd say 90th percentile would be a score I would be very happy with. That's impressive.
I think you're right. It overall, jobs will be newly created because of this. It's always the short term that where the problem is, right? Are you going to be like accountants and make it through just fine and even have more jobs? Or are you going to be like factory workers where your job just doesn't exist? Go train for another one because they exist. And that's what you have to look out for.
AI whispering. Your future career, AI whispering.
I have a friend who's a prompt
Hogwarts
engineer. And that's going to be a job. That is already a job, and it's just going to be a bigger job. Right. Yeah.
Well, Silicon Labs, a chip maker you may or may not have heard of, has a new chipset, the XG27, which is small, very small in fact, energy efficient enough to go where chips have never gone before. For example, into a human mouth. Now you might say, why would you ever want to do that? Well, the socks include the BG27 and the MG27. They're both built around the ARM Cortex M33 processor, with the BG27 focusing on Bluetooth, the MG27 supporting Zigbee and other protocols. Now, the chipsets range from about 2 millimeters squared to 5 millimeters squared. They're very small, with the BG27 currently being developed by Lura Health. That's a medical device maker. As a tooth-mounted wearable salivary diagnostic sensor that would let clinicians potentially test for more than 1,000 health conditions. You could either mount that onto a tooth itself, maybe wear it inside a night guard or other retainer, something, you know, that's mouth-related. But it's also very, very small, so it wouldn't be too much in your way. Lura Health says it's just finished clinical trials for the sensor with Yukon Orthodontics and will seek FDA approval.
This is really cool. The Zigbee thing just stuck out to me. I'm like, what? Is it not matter compliant? Like, I want to be able to set it up easily from my tooth. but yeah, this is wild. I mean, 2 millimeters, that's like the sharpened tip of a pencil.
Oh, teeny
right?
tiny. I mean, listen, yeah, I had braces right. 3 times. This is nothing. Put it on any one of my teeth, you'll never see it. But I was also pretty fascinated with, not only is it small, so you go, okay, sure, you know, a mouth is just one example of, you know, a place where you would want a chip to be quite small. But to be able to identify or at least test for so many health conditions, over 1,000 health conditions. Yeah. I knew that saliva could be helpful for some things, but I feel like this is huge medical advance, and we're all going to have these in a few years' time.
I mean, it's a matter of cost, right? Cost and insurance coverage, I guess, right?
Of course.
This is just the initial use too. The article was saying you could use it in a medical patch or as a glucose monitor, or even like a wearable EKG, which would be really tiny, so it wouldn't be in your way. It doesn't use a lot of power, 0.8 volts. This is a big advance. This is a good one. I like it.
Well, especially because I feel like a lot of the medical devices that aren't invasive tend to be like, let's put it under the skin.
Yeah.
And you're either weirded out by that or it's just not feasible because it's too big and, you know, will be strange.
But put it in my mouth.
Sort of.
Yeah.
Well, but it's small. It's small. Yeah, it's really tiny. Like a little, like a fun little diamond.
You could inject this under your skin and you wouldn't even notice.
That too.
It's really tiny. Could go in a little RFID container.
Well, Patrick Norton, we're not going to inject you under our skin, but we sure are going to have you back on the show early and often because you're our best friend. See what I did there?
Yay. That was nice.
But let folks know where they can keep up with everything else that you're doing in between appearances here.
Oh, as always, at Patrick Norton on the Twitter until Twitter collapses and burns, which I understand is imminent, depending on who you're following and whether or not they're trying to guilt you.
It's been imminent for months now.
Today. Somebody actually, like, they were blackmailing me. I'm never going to follow you again unless you go to Mastodon. And I'm like, man.
Is that blackmail? Or is that just like, bye?
Attempted.
Threat? I guess it was a threat. Blackmail's a strong word. You know, their heart was in the right place.
That's like the person who complained that we cover this ChatGPT nonsense too often. I'm like, well, sorry. we do tend to cover important news. So
the news does itself.
Yeah. As somebody who writes for a living, ChatGPT and its future and the future of whether or not I will be replaced by a very small shell script is very important. But that's just me. In any case, AVXL, search for it on your favorite podcatcher. Audio and video, home theater, personal audio. We cover all that stuff, and or search for it on your favorite podcatcher, AVXL.
Excellent. We also have two new, brand new bosses to thank. Joshua and Charlie just started backing us on Patreon. Thank you, Joshua. And thank you, Charlie.
Oh, my gosh. Joshua and Charlie, everybody welcome them in. It's good to have you. It's good to have new bosses. Whee. You are the light of our world. You make you power this podcast. You are the 0.8 volts that power the 2-millimeter chip that is Daily Tech News Show.
You complete me.
Exactly. That's another way of saying you complete me. Joshua and Charlie, stick around. You're getting good day internet now. And we're going to be talking about Apple's new live over video shopping assistant. Are you tired of AI? Well, this isn't AI. This is a live person available from Apple to help you buy Apple stuff, spend more money on Apple. Do we need or want this? I don't know. We're going to talk about that. Stick around to find out.
Just a reminder, you can catch DTNS live Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Eastern. That is 2000 UTC. And you can find out more at dailytechnewsshow.com/live. Love to have you join us live if you can. We'll be back tomorrow with Scott Johnson joining us. Don't miss it. Talk to you then.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com. The number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.